Hello, hello, hello. You are listening to KDNK Radio, and this is the Current Ritual Public Affairs Show. I'm your host, SS Kitty, and today I have Casey Pascura, our local beloved farmer here in the house. Welcome, Casey.
Great to be here, Kat.
Yay. So today we're going to get into as many topics as possible. I have been learning from you this year, and you have opened my eyes and mind to what living soil is and what regenerative agriculture is and the benefits and challenges. And I've been learning so much. So that's a big reason why I wanted to have you on the program, is because we really need to spread this information so that all of our community becomes aware of what you're doing over at Sunfire Ranch. So if you could, for listeners who don't know of you or Sunfire Ranch or Seed Peace, could you give a brief overview of what you've been up to the past few years?
Sure. So let's see. This is our 11th year as that I've been full-time farming in the Valley. Started out as doing a small CSA program, which basically means giving people a box of food every week. That then kind of drew my interest into seed saving, seed development. So Wild Mountain Seeds was formed, creating new seed varieties, adapting seeds to our climate. And so we sell seeds that way. And I've been there at Sunfire Ranch, which is owned by Jason and Alex Sewell. They're the last living descendants of Myron Thompson, who was one of the original founders of the Crystal Valley, so historic ranch. And they've allowed me to farm there, leasing land for, you know, basically free in support of our mission to really catalyze the growth of food in the Valley. In addition, last year we did a merger with the Farm Collaborative out of Aspen, which is was founded by Ed and Vardy, and together we're just looking at ways we can regenerate the food system, make more equitable opportunities for people in farming, as well as just like look at the whole of the infrastructure of the Valley and what we can do to try to catalyze better eating, more local food production.
Awesome. So based on that, because the growing season here is so short compared to, you know, other warmer climates. So can you speak a little bit about how you visualize local food production being feasible to feed the Valley?
Well, yeah, I mean, over my time up there, I guess we've just learned a lot of the tricks and ins and outs of what to do. The seed production kind of was, I really got into it and seeing that varieties that we would acquire weren't maybe as adaptable to our region and wouldn't size up in time. But really it's, you know, it's completely possible to grow a carrot, a beet, a potato, all these storage root crops, to full maturity and then have those store in a root cellar or something all winter. And it's more just like, what's the techniques you need to be successful? What's the infrastructure that you need? And then sharing the expertise and getting farmers on the land so that we can do more.
So compared to the operation, like how much land you're farming right now, what would ballpark be the expansion of that to feed more? Or, you know, if we're trying to eat as local as possible, because this is really a far alternative to going to the grocery store, which when I had Harper from Two Roots, she called it a mirage, the grocery store. And I think that's something that you're getting into, is like what's actually realistic and sustainable. And this is more of this seasonal preparing ahead, not, you know, relying on that grocery store. So I'm curious about the scaling of this.
Yeah, so I mean, currently we're on 3 acres of land. You know, our capacity based on our existing equipment and stuff, you know, it can grow by like how many farmers we have and, you know, the land base. I mean, currently I think we produced 45,000 pounds of produce on 3 acres this past year, with really 3 full-time people and then 3 part-time people and then a host of probably 10 volunteers that come through. So
Wow. That's
a lot of production. Yeah. Now you think about like how, what's the distribution of like how that is used. You know, it goes fresh market. So like things like tomatoes and that, it's pretty much harvested and sold within a day, which doesn't necessarily look at like how we would do a full year supply. So like if you're really trying to grow a complete diet, you're really focused on the things that are going to get you through those tough months when we don't have food supply.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be, you know, carrots, beets, daikons, parsnips, rutabagas, potatoes, those storage roots, which will onions, garlic, winter squashes, cabbages, all these types of things that can be grown in that window of being ready to be harvested right before the winter frost comes and then stored and supplied throughout the winter. So, I mean, it's kind of like we know how to grow in these windows, meaning, okay, I'm going to do a fall CSA. I'm planting, you know, in the middle of June or the beginning of June, knowing that everything will size up. This could be, instead of doing 2 rows, it could be 20 rows. It could be 400-foot rows. But the kind of limiting factor is the investment, the upfront investment, and the risk that needs to be taken. Who's going to take the risk to try to do this? Because, okay, now we've got it, got the crop. Now what? We need storage. We need to be able to monitor that storage. That stored vegetables needs to be washed, and that needs to be in a climate-controlled area. And it just starts to add up to a lot of capital investment that we can't really – I mean, you can –
Because would you build that infrastructure on Sunfire Ranch? Is there land there where you could scale on that, or would you need different land to build that kind of infrastructure?
So the infrastructure is in our master plan for – Sunfire Ranch, which would be like a large underground storage facility. This is all, so if people don't know, there is a conservation easement that was sold on the Sewell's property. And in that, in the master plan, it has allowable space for the things like this that would help support it. As far as growing space and infrastructure, I think we could scale up a little bit more, you know, there, for sure. There's a lot more if we decided. Mm-hmm. But in the greater valley, it's not like we need to replicate a, like, food storage processing facility on every parcel.
Right.
We might look for, like, okay, this is actually the best climate. It's the best spot for doing X crop.
Mm-hmm.
And then aggregate that to, you know, this facility where we store it and then wash it. And there's lots of potential out there. I mean, I've always thought, well, can we have kids in the high schools? Like, could we have the aggregation point of the food be there? And then they actually take care of that as part of their curriculum in the mm-hmm. in the winter. And I think right now we're kind of getting the expertise right, but also getting the word out that, like, look, like, make – if you want to make an investment into the Farm Collaborative or Seed Piece or ultimately into what is a really secure place to do farming, proof by 10 years of doing it there at the Sunfire Ranch, like, know that, like, we're going to make really good use of this invested capital in creating more food supply over a longer period of time and more access.
Is there an opportunity, like, because this feels like our community needs to support this. Like, this feels like, yeah, maybe there's some big investors and you know, donations and things, but this also seems like it would be really nice for each individual in the community to be involved. I know, you know, I was part of the CSA. I know people buy your produce at the farmers market, but outside of those, explain what are the opportunities for people to get involved or to see this mission, you know, come into fruition in the future.
Yeah, so I mean, we're actively planning for this expansion, and you know, investment or looking in, you know, we're a 501c3 organization, so there's opportunity.
Which means it's nonprofit.
Which means right. It's a nonprofit. Which means people can help us get there. And the amazing thing is that the Sewell family and Sunfire Ranch have this master plan, which has this infrastructure that will be this great support system. And they're willing, you know, to have that land, a long-term lease for the organization, as well as they're looking to invest their own capital in a matching way.
Wow. Is there a monetary plan with this master plan that has raising, you know, the levels that you want to raise goals wise, or is that something that's to be determined?
The Sewells were awarded a transfer of development right for a piece of land that they own that they're donating to the nonprofit that then we are hoping to sell in the open market, which can be anywhere from $1.5 to $2 million, which we're looking to solicit matching donations for that, which would hopefully get us to somewhere around the $4 million of capital that would then go to the new wash and pack, the storage facility, and the shop, and kind of like, because if you've been out to Sunfire Ranch and you see where we make all the vegetables happen, I mean, it's open air,
right?
And it's very much bootstrapped with low capital, and we just need a facility because our skill sets from a growing standpoint is there. It's just, you know, hard to do it.
And that was my next question, actually, was where have you gained this information? And I did the farm tour with you that one day where you were talking about positioning certain things on the outside so the runoff to the soil gets certain nutrients, and you were blowing my mind with all of your knowledge of how to, and it instead of big farms that do GMOs and very industrialized farms, you know, they have their expertise and specialty that's looking at yields and all of that stuff. But when I was listening to you talk about your ideas on how to farm, it was this holistic, beautiful, integrated awareness of how to be a good steward of the land versus extracting from it what you need was the feel that I got. So where did that come from? Where did this awareness of the timing of crops, the how to get seeds right, is this all self-taught? Do you have a mentor? Are there classes? Where have you learned all of this?
So let's see. I started out gardening with my parents, and I was.
So this has been a bit thing since you were little.
Yeah, I was in 4-H, and my parents gave me my own little plot, and they were like, "Take care of it, and if you didn't water it, and I just was one of those kids that's like, okay, I got obsessed, and then it was natural for me just to understand the plants from then on, kind of like when you learn it's a language at a young age. And then I always knew I wanted to farm from there, but you know, teenage years and things got in the way of some of that stuff. And then I went to school for crop and soil science at Virginia Tech, which at the time I didn't know really where to go in agriculture, so I studied the soil science and it got me some knowledge, but the whole of the what we were teaching was to be in the context of chemical agriculture. So I did learn a lot in the
and
soil
when you
class,
say chemical but, agriculture, do you mean like mainstream big farms using pesticides?
Yeah, that? Just our whole system of feeding ourselves, whether it's confined animal feeding, the fact that you grow corn in these types of monocultures with seed that you can spray chemicals on that doesn't kill the crop, and then that gets shipped, you know, just like how it all happens.
So you call that chemical agriculture?
Well, I don't like calling it conventional because
conventional. No, this is the first time I've heard that term. Yeah. That's why I'm just like, I need to highlight this, everybody, because this is like a light bulb. Like, because all of us really need to sink into the truth about the reality of the food situation in America.
Yeah.
So,
and
so I like that.
There's lots of tragedies in this whole thing. And I don't think it was, you know, people with evil intent. We were just out. We didn't know the consequences.
Well, and it goes back to that ideology that I was pointing out earlier of like sort of the capitalist way of looking at the earth and its resources versus being a steward mm-hmm. of Mother Earth and being seeing the plants and the animals as our ancestors, as our, you know, family, and then stewarding the earth in a way that looks at the health and well-being of all the parts of the system. So that's like the big transition of why I respect you and your work so much is seeing that you have that awareness. And I think all of us need to develop that level of awareness and then proceed. So going back, I want to circle back because people can buy your food at through CSAs at the farmers market. They can donate. Is there any other ways to get involved for people who are waking up to this and want to support this and be involved in this and learn more?
Try to really know where your food comes from, no matter what level it is. And if you can buy something locally, that's great. I think prioritizing where you want to spend your money, oftentimes people are like, it's too expensive. Well,
I disagree.
Well, I've been in the valley, like where I was, you know, struggling, river guide, spending all my money on things, but I still, like, I prioritize that food over other things. And when you do that, you're prioritizing the way the farming was done, and thus you're prioritizing the health of the land involved. So, you know, and I just, it's really important.
Well, as far as return on investment, do you want to speak to the health benefits of eating local?
Yeah, I'm, so the soil system or say the agricultural system, if it is in health, meaning that the life is thriving, photosynthesis is high, which is sequestering carbon, which is good for the earth, and you eat that food, it's like mirrors in your own body, and then you have the vibrancy, you have all the diversity, and that equates to a healthy gut biome, and then you have a really good, you know, you have
immune
all the
system,
you have all the nutrients learning, you need. You have a strong immune system, mm-hmm. and you don't need to go to the doctor and you just see like kids eating good and their behavior being really good. Just all the benefits. And I mean,
it's worth the investment.
Yeah. You know, people that know me, it's like, I can't remember when I had the common cold.
Right.
Things like that, that you're just like, how am I so immune to getting sick? And it has to do with, you know, having living food coming from living soil. And that's, you know, that goes back to like, you invest by buying an organic thing, you know, you don't know who the farm was either way, but you know, if it's conventional, that it's definitely using chemicals that are hurting the earth.
Mm-hmm.
And if it says USDA organic, yeah, it might be, but at least it's some people that are trying that want to put themselves in this group. And so I think people just got to realize it's like, you got to vote with your dollar.
Right.
You have to, like, I want to put my investment in this bucket, which is better for the earth. And even better, I want to put it locally into this person that's trying, and it's, you know, it's difficult around here to make it.
Right. And so we have, we've got like 5 or 6 minutes left. So from that, let's talk about some of the challenges, some of the real challenges that you're facing, because you've been doing this a long time. You're not going anywhere, I hope, and only want to see this, you know, grow and become something. So what are the challenges that you're facing at the moment?
Well, I mean, I think the overall challenge of everybody around here is how can you create equity for the people that want to do this difficult work so that they can survive here? And as we've seen this huge
because of cost of living,
yeah, being so high. So we've seen, you know, all the big boom of people coming, especially since the pandemic. And, you know, it takes a lot of money to live here. And it's a short season. It's capital intensive. Farming has a deflationary force that is the grocery store that's always there with who knows what. So people have options, you know, so you got like kind of a cap on the prices you can charge. And so it just becomes really hard to pencil it out. And hopefully the nonprofit helps with that. I think, you know, the larger goal is to figure out how can we make like farmers here some of the best paid farmers in the country. And if you do that, you're going to attract the top talent. And if you get top talent, you get top health and food. So it's, you know, the financial piece is a huge challenge. I think that's the biggest one. I think also attracting people to the profession, because it is, you know, I'm lucky that I have some amazing farmers that work with me, but they're all in. It's what they do. It's what they live to do it. They can't do it without it. How do we find those people in our community and make sure that they can like do it? Because
I know we need to, we need CMC to get involved. It's almost like we need like a degree here in the Valley where we're educating people and creating the workforce. And so maybe we need to have a meeting with CMC or something in the future to talk about you and or whoever, you know, creating, because for me, that's what I've realized from being in healthcare, is the best staffed hospitals always had a university nearby that was, and so you had a teaching hospital where people were being trained, they were doing internships, you know, there was free labor involved, that they were getting degrees, you know, and it was kind of feeding the industry with the people and the talent that you need. And that's what I think we're lacking in this valley in a lot of ways, is the universities to have teaching situations, apprenticeship situations. So that maybe is a community opportunity on how to look, how we move forward with supporting this mission and this vision as well. Let's see. We're coming up on running out of time. Let me see. I feel like we hit on most of the things that I wanted to talk about. So real quick, if you could comment on the new project that you're doing at Sunfire Ranch with, I don't know what to call it, the soil warming technology that you're doing. And just give people a quick glance and of what you're doing and why you're doing it.
Yeah. So this fall, we're working on a new greenhouse. That greenhouse has a subsoil heating system similar to like some something you would see, a radiant floor system for your house. And, you know, the tricky problem around here is that you're watering with cold water. It's hard to get the soils up to temperature. And really during runoff season, the cold water slows the biologic activity down, and thus you aren't able to optimize all the sunlight you have turning that into photosynthesis, which equals growth and food, whether it be early or whatever. So we're trying to solve that with our current greenhouse, but then also looking at a bigger project, which we're trying to figure out how to worm the whole water of the whole farm by kind of connecting a bunch of above ground water tanks, looking at passive systems to get that water up, which I think then could revolutionize how we do things where, you know, they say that plants are only photosynthesizing maybe of 20% or even less, 15% of their capabilities if they had the right environment. So I mean, think about that. If your tomato is only growing 20% of what it could grow, well, why does it grow so good in California or Oregon? It's because the environment is right for it there, so it's able to be in that, and it's sequestering more carbon in California than it is in Colorado. And so we're just like, how do we make our system to make that happen here? You know, how to increase the photosynthetic efficiency by creating systems.
Because warm water and warm soil make plants more efficient with how they grow? Is that
right? Then they can use the sun that's there.
Okay.
Because otherwise they're too cold, the biology's too slow, they don't have the nutrients they need, they're in more of a survival survival mode. But that could mean like where we, like the days to get a carrot is 60 days. You know, like, or if it's like, it's a 60-day carrot in California, it's an 80 to 100-day carrot here. We can go back to 60. Now we're creating more in the same land on this, with the same time. And that's the innovation side of our organization is really like, it's how do we build systems to where it becomes common knowledge. So common knowledge of how to do this is ubiquitous. And then we just start executing and solving the problems to make a bigger supply and replicate this as many places so we can create alternatives to, you know, going to the store, supporting chemical agriculture, which is, you know, depleting the earth and causing a lot of problems for humans.
Not sustainable. Well, thank you so much for blessing us with your wisdom, and thank you for your talent and your effort. And I certainly love eating and cooking with your food. It's been super grounding for me this year, and I will continue to support. So as the parting message, we have like 30 seconds. Tell people where to go to donate or to learn more. Is there a website, a phone number? What, you know, where to send people where they need to go to find you?
Yeah, so farmco.org or the farmcollaborative.org or seedpeace.org. And go check it out. And it's my pleasure. It really is great work. You know, I really encourage people to get involved, come out, see the farm, see that these are beautiful places, see the importance and prioritize that as part of our community.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Casey, and thank you for listening. This has been KDNK Radio and SS Kitty signing off. I'll see you next time, or hear you next time.
Better change your ways, or I'm going to change my mind. You better change your ways, or I'm going to change my mind.